I am Justin Boyd.
And I'm confused.
Tristan Jones.
Marcy.
And we are the Watchers in the Basement. Welcome to the Watchers in the Basement. We are here today to discuss Succession, episode, season 4, episode 8. The title of the episode, America Decides. Although I think ATN actually decided this one. Let's go around the room, get everybody's overall thoughts on the episode. Marcy, starting with you, what did you think about America Decides, episode 8?
I think it was a good episode. Maybe not like my favorite election episode of all time. That is probably still the West Wing. But some important things happened in this episode that we'll get into later when it comes to Tom and Shiv. And then obviously the election has been decided, you know, or has it? But all in all, I think it was a solid episode. Good performances from everyone. Cousin Greg, again, coming in with like some great comic relief. So yeah, good episode.
Frank, what do you think?
So I know I'm the opposite of the consensus. I've read a lot of like articles about this season and the last 4 or 5 weeks. I'm personally just watching the last season just to have closure. I'm ready for it to end. I haven't really found much interest in these characters this season. They're very redundant as far as like what they've gone through, what they've been through, their fuck ups. They're so predictable now. So last week, it took me about 4 days to watch last week's episode. Cause like I kind of predicted everything was gonna happen as far as the decision making, and when I get to a point with characters to where you're not aesthetically interesting to me anymore, I kind of phase out. And it's getting to a point where like they're just every bad team franchise ownership group when it comes to bad teams. Like nobody knows what they're doing. There hasn't been really much growth for me with these characters. The last 4 episodes had just felt like 1 4-long-hour episode. So I don't know where we go from here. I don't know how it ends. I'm just kind of just waiting for the end to see how it ends.
Yeah, I think it's going to, I said this last week, I've said it before, I think it's going to be pretty messy, just kind of like how the show has been. And I think that yeah, these people are fuck-ups, but I mean, they're entertaining fuck-ups. I enjoy watching the mess that they make with their lives and with this company. And so Tristan, what are your thoughts on episode 8?
Man, this is awkward. I'm willing to make the case that episode 8 quite possibly is in the top, you know, on the top list of like best Succession episodes. One of the best hours of television I've seen in a while. I thought it was gripping from start to finish. I was like pretty locked in, like emotionally, following every, you know, the various happenings in this episode. So yes, I think the redundant part of the show is that we see the different ways that pretty much everybody, but especially, you know, Kendall, Shiv, Roman, Connor, that these are fuck ups. Like, I think that's one of the central like motifs of this show, but the brilliance of the show, and especially this season, especially this, you know, episode 8, you know, America Decides, which is ironic in itself as a title, is that more and more we're starting to see like the consequences of their actions about for everyone else, right? And that was the big thing for episode 8, America Decides, is that yeah, Kendall's a fuck up. Like Kendall struggles with leadership because he wants so bad to be the man. Like he tries too hard, right? Roman doesn't try enough, right? But he's petulant, impulsive, and it kind of negates all of his like good business instincts. And Shiv just consistently flies too close to the sun. She thinks she's way smarter than what she is. She doesn't have the experience for like a lot of her ambitions. And the tenor of the show in the first 3 seasons is different than season 4 because we're able more to laugh at like the fatal flaws of these characters. It's funny, right? Because the consequences are so low stakes. right? It's just succession. It's like, who's going to take over the company? You know, who's going to get this payout? Like, are we going to acquire this company? You know, so on and so forth. What we're seeing in season four is what we, I guess the biggest stakes of this show is like, who are they portraying, right? The Murdochs, like all these different families, you know, who have these succession issues. But like, these things don't just affect the families. They affect society as a whole. And the brilliance of the of America Decides, episode 8, is that we see that it, not just like the, you know, the commentary of, hey, you have this privileged small group of people who are deciding things, but basically the president of the United States was chosen in one room by three siblings, you know, over some side deal that they don't want to go through, that, or some of them don't want to go through. Like, this petty family squabbling pretty much decided the fate and future of the United States of America. And that's the brilliance of this show and this episode is, yeah, we know they're fuck-ups, but like, so far, what all has their fuck-up really led to? Like, if we take a step back, people have died because of their fuck-ups.
Yep.
You know, whole companies and countries and stuff like that have been affected because of, you know, the decisions they made. And we just saw it now. Like, again, democracy pretty much was decided, ruined by, like, these decisions that they're making. So, and these fuck-ups. So, I thought it was a brilliant, near-perfect episode, mostly because so much of what we saw in this episode, like, literally happened. You know what I'm saying? Like, we lived through that, and it was kind of gripping to kind of rethink and reimagine those feelings as they were occurring, you know, on live TV. So I loved it. I watched it twice. Can't wait to watch it, you know, four or five more times.
Yeah, no, it's a great episode. And, you know, the episode, the premise is it's election night in America. And it, honestly, it really feels like that. It felt like a real election night, and it was one of the more like intense episodes of the show. I mean, the whole way through, it's just kind of building and building and building up until the end when, you know, ATN decides to call the presidential race for Mencken. Now, I think, as Marcy, you mentioned a little bit ago, I don't think that he is, you know, for sure the president going forward. I think that's still going to be determined, but, and I don't think that'll be determined in the rest of the season, considering there's only two episodes left. But Tristan, you're right. It shows like the stakes of this episode were on a much higher level than everything else. This was like, you know, they're affecting the country, the world, you know, all of our lives if we were living in this exact world, which our world is not too far off from the one that these siblings seemingly are now running. But no, it's just a great episode. I think you know, Roman's quote at the end of the episode kind of nailed it, where he said, "We just made a good night of TV." And I agree with that. Of course, then he said nothing happens, because for him, nothing ever happens, because he's always has this blanket of money to fall into. He you know, he's always going to be safe, but, you know, Shiv then says, you know, things do happen. And so now again, are we going to see these things play out? Maybe some of them, but there's not a lot of time left. There's only two episodes left. So, that's the part about this show I can't get over. I just, like, there's only two episodes left. When this show ends, there's going to be a lot of meat left on the bone. You know, like, they could definitely do a season five, and this show will probably end on a very, very high note. But I feel like in 5 years, we're going to be like, man, they should have kept going a little bit longer, because there's a lot of story to tell. And I don't see how you can possibly even wrap up this season in the next two episodes with everything. I mean, there's still things we talked about last week, as far as, like, you know, Kendall's past coming back from killing that waiter in season one. Is that ever going to come back into play? Like, there's only two episodes left. So,
but I think, especially with a lot of HBO shows, like, there's not always a lot of finality to their finales, yeah, you know, fair. Like Sopranos, there's no finality. Like, we don't know if Tony Soprano gets killed. And even if he does, like, what does that say about, you know, the mafia system? Like, it just keeps going, right? The Wire.
Yeah.
Like, it's just those same kids that we loved in season four, and, like, they turned out in different ways in season five, and the cycle just kind of repeats. And Succession is telling us a story about American privilege and love and money and stuff like that. And those stories really never end. Like Kendall killed a kid or helped a kid die, you know, through his own malfeasance. That happens. You know, that people get off. Dick Cheney is roaming around free as we speak. Like, these things happen. We just kind of keep moving on and keep rolling. And I think that's the finality of it. It's just, it's for you to see, for us to see from a broad distance, like, this is what the one, this is how the 1% lives. And this is how their decisions affect other things. And we just kind of move on to the next family. So I don't expect, like, these things to be wrapped up, because that's just not how life is. Like, things just don't always get wrapped up. We just kind of keep going.
I think I lack patience for insanity. I for people who are clinically sane, and Yellowstone's one of my favorite shows. I'll give you an example with Yellowstone. For the first 3.5 seasons, man, Beth is just riveting TV. Like, she explodes off the scene, whether it's with her temper, her very cunning ways to, like, get things done for her dad. After a while, 5 years of that, and, like, there's no much growth to her character, it gets to a point where I'm just kind of like, okay, what else do you have for this character's profile as far as their writing, like, in their development? And that's kind of where I'm at with the kids now. It's like, yes, poor daddy didn't prep you to be leaders in this, to be leaders in this world. And it's kind of like, okay, cool. Well, what life examples can you take now from this current situation of, like, failed business attempts, acquiring new businesses? What can you do to improve on that? And it's just more of the same. And it's kind of like, where do you go with that? Like, is it going to be another 4 or 5 more seasons? I know you said that it might end abruptly, but it's just 4 or 5 more seasons of just bad writing. Not bad writing, but, like, just bad mistakes and just horrible decision-making when it comes to, like, whether or not I should inflate the numbers for this Life Plus, or whether or not I should, you know, lie about these numbers about go ahead and saying that, I don't want to buy this company from Madison or Madison buy a company because he's inflating numbers. It's like, all these people are just petulant. And there's nobody just making the right decisions outside of, like, Frank and Jerry and Carl. And it's just kind of like, does anybody make sense of this shit? And that's kind of where I'm at now.
Yeah, I think that, this show, obviously this is kind of based on the Murdochs, which the family that owns Fox and Fox News and all that stuff. And, you know, this show is kind of a mirror reflection of life, and kind of like what Tristan was saying, like, stuff just kind of keeps on going, especially with the HBO shows. They don't wrap it up in a nice bow. And I think the show is really entertaining. That's why I want it to keep going, because I just really enjoy it. I think the writing is superb. The actors are awesome. I love them in these characters. And even though they're not redeemable people, you don't really root for anybody. Like, it's just so entertaining. I love watching the show. That's why I want it to continue. I don't think that, you know, it's not like Game of Thrones where someone's going to sit on the throne and be the king or whatever. It's not that kind of show. And Game of Thrones wasn't even that kind of show either. So I don't know. I just like the show. I like the characters and I want to keep it going. Speaking of the characters, let's toss to Marcy. Marcy, so when ATN calls the election for Jared Mencken, this is a big win for Roman, because Roman's had a couple of tough episodes. This is kind of his bounce back, because Mencken is his guy. And you know, now he's kind of positioned himself to be the CEO by himself and kind of pushing Kendall out of the way. I'm not sure if Kendall totally, and Kendall kind of sees that, but you know, with what Kendall decides at the end, he actually aids Roman. So this is a big Roman episode. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Roman made some good plays in this episode. Last episode, he wasn't able to deliver Connor to Mencken, but now he's able to kind of deliver on other things that Mencken wanted. So maybe positioning himself to be the lone CEO. However, we also don't know how this ends, right? Like, we aren't sure that the presidency is going to be called for Mencken. Like, that's not for ATN to decide. That's for, like, courts to decide if there had been a thing with the ballots and the fire. So he might have shot himself in the foot, because we don't know what is going to happen to ATN because of that. You know, in the real world, Fox got sued by Dominion for, you know, telling all of these lies after the last election, and they have to pay huge amounts. So maybe that is something that they want to set up for this to happen to ATN after just kind of deciding this presidential election. And I think also Kendall probably shot himself in the foot, because when he felt betrayed by Shiv and then did what Roman wanted to do, that set Roman up to kind of push Kendall out of the way. So I think it was cunning on Roman's part, but just kind of bad decision making on all of their parts, and just kind of making deals with the devil. And I think they're all going to get bit in the ass, and like, nobody's going to win. I think they all made stupid choices.
Yeah. It seems like Roman, I mean, he kind of had a plan, but it was more of him, you know, failing upward. He just kind of was still standing, whereas Shiv and Kendall kind of knocked each other out of position. Tristan, what are your thoughts on how Roman kind of positioned himself at the end of this episode?
I think it's funny what Roman considers like a win. Like, because basically his win was upsetting democracy, perpetuating, you know, races, stereotypes and tropes and stuff like that. If this is a you know, successful Roman episode, and again, this is why I said this, I love this episode so much, and how this episode is kind of like a culmination of everything we've seen from these characters. Like, this is like the payoff, right? On Roman's side, all the petulance, all the impulsiveness, all of the crass, you know, trolling and all these things, this led to him, like, the worst part of Roman, right? The basis part of his character played out in the way that which side he chose to take, and the actions he chose to take to get this person in position to be, at least be perceived as the next president of the United States, despite all the bad he knows is going to cause for a lot of people, for the network, for, you know, the company, all these things. Like, all he can think about is self-interest. And all of these characters, pretty much every character in the show, in this episode, is driven by self-interest in some type of way, despite knowing what a nightmare that Minkin as president would be on all of them. Either they aggressively try to make Minkin president, or they passively allow him to be made president, or the perception of him as president. So for Roman, again, this is, if there was a time where you felt like Roman was your favorite character, like, that had to end after this episode. Really, you know, maybe last week, the week before, like, he has been demonstrating these sociopathic, you know, kind of sadistic ways that he sees people. And this is the most cynical Roman episode of all throughout the entire series. And again, he's still driven by that, the hurt from, you know, from his father passing, the, you know, the constant perception of him as a screw up, somebody who can't do things. Like, it's only making him go harder on the wrong side of where he should be. So I thought this was a big payoff for, like, all the insults that we've seen Roman do, all the hurt and stuff that he's kind of kept locked in inside. Like, it came out at the end, right? What did he say to Kendall? Like, when we were kids, you got chicken and I got steak. So, like, this is my opportunity to get the steak that I want, regardless of what was going to happen as a result, regardless of the carnage that's going to be left from the damage. Like, he just wanted his stake. He wanted his time in the sun. He wanted to be in charge. So this can only, one of the biggest patterns that we've seen in Succession is that every time Roman gets a big win and he starts high-stepping and, you know, celebrating a little bit too early, like, it comes crashing down. And I think that's what's going to happen in episode 9.
Frank, I know you're a big Roman guy at the beginning of the season. What did you think about him in this episode?
It just falls in line of who Roman is. Roman is somebody who's not to be taken serious. He's a guy that's gonna hide his emotions and how he feels through quips and jokes and, like, and like just surface level emotional conversation. He's trying to be a extension of his dad. I mean, I go back to the conversation he had with Jerry, where he says, "Hey, like, I need you to believe I'm good as my dad." And Jerry says, "You want me to say it, or you want me to believe it?" Yeah. Like he's chasing this ghost of like, because it's like every other episode or every 55 minutes, he's telling his siblings, or asking his siblings, "What would dad do?" And it's kind of like, I don't know if he can formulate one individual thought that comes out of Roman's mind without believing that that thought is attached to what Logan would have done. So my feelings for him has not changed at all. He is who he is. He's a sexual deviant little twerp that's of privilege, who is great at one-liners. That's what he's been since season one. Nothing's changed.
Yeah, and you know, in this episode, you see that he's been a Mencken guy for a while, but he seems to sell it to Kendall on the thought that, hey, like, this guy, he'll play ball. He'll make sure that the deal with Gojo doesn't go through. We don't want it to go through. He can block it. Whereas Daniel Jimenez, the Democratic candidate, won't promise them that. So, you know, in a lot of ways, like, you're right, like, Roman, I mean, they're all constantly talking about, what would dad do? What would dad do? And Roman thinks he knows what his dad would do. His dad would do whatever the fuck he wanted to do. And in this case, you know, like, you've got a guy in your pocket. You've talked it out. You have a deal. Go with the deal. And, you know, who cares about, you know, he talks about, like, oh, America, and like, mockingly. And I like how Kendall's like, yeah, but he's like, it is kind of a good idea where all the people are, different people are living together. Like, it's, I love how they talk about this stuff. You know, it doesn't really affect them because, like I said, they're insanely wealthy, and they don't, you know, there's one part where Roman even calls, like, you know, the voters, the peasants. He's like, who cares what the peasants vote for, or who they think is, you know, who should be the president? I don't know. It's, you know, I think Roman, this might've been one of his better episodes, but also he's, as far as likability, like, not that any of these people are likable, he's on the lower end of the scale. I think this wasn't like, you're like, if you're a Roman fan, you're not like pumping your fist. You're like, man, this guy, I mean, maybe he's going to win, but I don't know. Still sucks.
I guess maybe it also depends on your maybe political or ideological views. Some there people might have been rooting for Roman last night. Who knows?
And
it's true.
And again, like, another reason I say is payoff. Like, Roman has been cruel since the beginning. Like, it's been kind of clouded in these jokes, you know, these sibling jokes and stuff. But we saw it at the football game in the first season. Like, that cruelty just kind of pops out. And like I said, so far we've laughed at it. You know, we talk about, like, Roman's best one-liners, but, like, all those one-liners came into play last night, came in Sunday's episode. And, like, there are real world consequences of that cruelty, which means we have to take him seriously. Like, he's not a serious person, right? Like, even Shivs had to tell him, like, hey, this is the grown-up table. Like, the things you're saying are not serious, but that's the point. He doesn't need to be serious. He has privilege. He has money. He has power, right? So, like, he could be dumb as hell. And actually, things are worse because he's dumb as hell, and he's impulsive, and he's petulant, and he has all his money, power, you know, prestige, so on and so forth. So on one end, yeah, we don't take him seriously because he's a moron, right? And he's the worst of all the other morons. But that's exactly why we should take him seriously, and why he should be watched and more sanctioned, because morons can become president, or they can help put a president in place, and some things that we can't really undo.
This really gives me Enron vibes. There was a point in time where Enron was like the mecca of the United States, and like the CEOs and like the board of trust, the board of regents, the board of governors, they were running like tech and running like Fortune 500 top five in the world at one point. And again, like the Roys, with bad management, bad decision making, leveraging numbers, inflating numbers, like we're seeing in this show, it came to a screeching halt to where Enron doesn't even survive anymore. It doesn't exist. It's a punchline in 2023. As of 1998, it was the mecca of the United States and going to the 21st century. So they gotta be careful, man, because you know, power is temporary, bro. It's temporary. I don't care how powerful you are, you're not immortal with it unless you're a god. So it could end in Enron type of storyline. We'll see. I mean, there are things that are being planted right now throughout this season to show that it might show its ugly head in episode 10.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of ugly the next couple episodes. That's my expert opinion or prediction. So while Roman seemingly got a big win last night, Shiv had a tough go of it. You know, her she leans more liberal. So her candidate, I mean, her company, obviously the network, called in favor of the opponent, which doesn't necessarily mean that's who's going to win the election, but that was a tough one for her. She had her Madsen secret was exposed by cousin Greg. And also she told Tom about being pregnant and he was pretty skeptical about that. Also, Marcy, let's talk about Shiv. Where do you want to start? There's a lot of angles to go. What would you like to talk about with Shiv first off?
Rough night for Shiv. Yeah. Let's get into kind of her pregnancy reveal with Tom. I think, you know, in the past couple pods that we've done, we're just kind of like, okay, she hasn't told him. He has a right to know. Why hasn't she told him? I think this is exactly why she didn't tell him. She knew that their relationship was in a very terrible place. And if she told him, he might not react well. And he reacted terribly last night, right? Not only was he cold and cruel about it, but then he was like kind of questioning like whether it was true, which you could really tell that hurt her, even though Shiv is like, she even calls herself hot shit and she thinks she's tough. That doesn't mean she doesn't have any feelings. And I think that really cut very deep with her. So we just kind of see her continue to unravel. And she kind of threatens cousin Greg that she's going to kill him if he kind of like betrays her, which he ends up doing. So I want to see what the payoff of that is. Like, I definitely want to see her kind of get her revenge on cousin Greg, but she had a very difficult night. She's dealing with all of these personal things, but also she's trying to make sure that ATN isn't completely fucking up how they're calling the election. She wants to keep it like somewhat democratic and she, you know, wants to follow the rules that you're supposed to follow. So she was just dealing with a lot, not only personally, but professionally, and just kind of being the voice of reason in a way, saying like, okay, like not even dad would do this. Dad would like still wait to see, you know, what the actual polls are saying. And like, he wouldn't just be quick to call this. So she was the one that's just kind of like, hey guys, like not even dad would be this stupid or, you know, impetuous. But, I think her brothers just kind of found out that she had double crossed them. So now she has to get back at them. And I'm very eager to see how that is, because a part of me is like, yeah, Shiv, burn this shit down. Like, I am with you. Because not once, but twice in this episode, men called her hysterical. Yep. For just kind of pointing out truth and being passionate about it, which is something that gets on my nerves, because men just tend to want to call women hysterical when we are passionate about something. So burn it down, Shiv. I'm with you.
I think with Shiv, the one thing with her, when she told Tom, the timing of it wasn't a great time to tell him. I mean, it's election night. Also, they're in the middle of a fight. And it wasn't like she didn't go that night to tell him that. She went to talk to him and try to get him to apologize to her from what happened in the previous episode, because she kind of apologized to him. And then she said, you know, this is your chance to apologize to me. And Tom wasn't, you know, he didn't feel like he wanted to apologize or didn't feel like he needed to. And that's when she dropped the bomb of, oh, by the way, and yeah, I'm pregnant with your child. So the timing of that was not great. I don't know.
On the first watch, I felt a little bit of sympathy for Shiv, because I'm like, you know, She did apologize. And I think she meant the apology, but I think the apology was also part of a multi-layered plot to regain the upper hand in that relationship with Tom. And that's really her biggest impetus in that relationship, is having Tom be subservient to her. So like, she apologized real quick, but it was like a quick pivot to, hey, and here's your opportunity to apologize to me. Like, and then she started making excuses. She brings up her dad and stuff like that. And that's when the manipulative Shiv came out. Like, she couldn't hide it for that long. On the second watch, like, it's a lot clearer, because, you know, she's pissed off about all these different things. And it's like a quick shift to Tom. Like, oh, now let me, you know, at least try to get this win with Tom when I'm not getting these wins from my brothers and all these different things. And everything's falling apart with Mattson. You know, my brothers are not really fully linking me in with everything that they're doing. And Tom's all reliable. Like, she can dunk on Tom whenever she wants to. And Tom pretty much shuts her out emotionally, calls into question, like, hey, is this pregnancy like a tactic or something like that? And I think she's genuinely hurt, but it's hard to feel sympathy for the hurt she feels, because I don't think that she told him about this pregnancy from a sincere place, right? It was more so like, hey, I want to bring you down emotionally so that we can be back on the same level. And Tom, I don't know if I want to say for his credit, but Tom just, he completely, like, he ices her out. Really throughout the entire episode, like, he, you know, calls her unhinged and stuff like that. Like, it's a big turn from Tom as far as like how he interacts and how he talks and thinks about Shiv. When, you know, previously he would like run through a wall for a compliment from Shiv, and I think that part of him is kind of dead. He's also high on coke, like, so, like, that's making him more paranoid, more impulsive, like. These things that cocaine tends to do, so I've heard, not from experience.
Right.
So
I mean, before the show, we all, you know,
absolutely,
yeah, we had
on
to
the whiteboard and hit right. on the whiteboard. And
it's
go.
Good for the brain medically. That's what we heard from me.
Don't be a racist about it, is what he told Greg.
Aztecs were not stupid people, man.
Right.
So I don't know how that ends in the last two episodes. I don't, you know, the reveal of this pregnancy, not how I thought she was, that, you know, Tom was going to find out. But, you know, everything's on the table with Tom and Shiv. Like I said, like, that's just, their relationship is a central part of this show, I think. So everything's on the table. Like, I could see her, you know, taking a baby and going off somewhere. I could see so many different options with this kid, but I certainly don't think that, you know, she told him about this kid because she wants them to be this happy family. Like, the way she, I think she said, there's no good way to say this. Like, there's a billion good ways to say, hey, I'm having your child. Like, what do you mean there's no good? Like, that, again, I hate Tom telling her that having children, she may not be the best person to have children, was right. a shitty thing to say. There's a lot of merit to it, you know, at the same time. So, like, two things can be true.
Plenty of merit. The motherfuckers, though, last season she joked around and said, I don't love you. And she might have meant the shit. And then, like, you're willing to sell your husband up the river to go to prison to sit for a crime he didn't commit, that your family committed.
But he did volunteer himself. I mean, that one, I can see her side, because he was, like, he's very, you know, lives to serve. That's kind of like Tom. He was happy.
What my wife would do if I said, "Hey, I'll volunteer to go to prison." Like, no, absolutely. Actually, you're not. Like, that's a two person decision.
Yeah,
like, it affected her none at all.
None. It's like, if you love this man, if you love your spouse, you're not going to let them make that stupid ass decision. Or even, there's going to be a conversation at hand. Like, motherfucker, when we come to this meeting, you better not even speak up about volunteering yourself. Like, that conversation should have been had. And it's kind of like, when you treat people like shit for so long, you can't be mad when that person reacts in the same way that you treat that person. She created this cocoon of, like, this shitstorm of a marriage. So, like, why are you being so upset when he's at a point now? It took Tom four seasons to get to a point to where he's emotionally unavailable now. You know what I'm saying? And maybe the cocaine sped it up, but like, that's him. That's how he really feels. He just hadn't have been man enough to say it out loud. You know what I'm saying? So like, like Texas Potter has said, I felt nothing for Shiv at that point, because when you're such an emotional terrorist and you use it to get wins rather than to collaborate in this marriage of love and commitment, dedication, what do you expect to get how to be treated? You know what I'm saying? And then you told this man on election night. So and again, it felt like you told this man to like gain sympathy in a narcissistic way. And it's kind of like every emotion that Shiv, the only time I actually feel for Shiv is when she's alone and she's crying or she's like overwhelmed talking to the doctor or something. Cause I know at that point that emotion is valid. It's not, she's not using it for some type of emotional gain. But when she shows any type of vulnerability around other people, I have to question it because I don't know whether or not it's for real. And she's created that mantra. So when you create that mantra about yourself, you can't be mad when people question you about it.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, to me, when Shiv told Tom, it was a comeback line. You know, like, she used it as a weapon. She said it for shock value. It wasn't, you know, this, like, it wasn't like she's really even giving him information. It's like, here, I'm taking a shot at you to surprise you because, you know, it's election night. He's under all this pressure from everyone. Everyone wants numbers from him. They want these good numbers and all this stuff. You know, she was in a tough place, and it just got worse for her going as the episode continued. And just want to say real quick, we have a lot of good Tom and Shiv commentary going on in the chat from Roxby and the Texas Potterheads. We appreciate y'all joining us. We appreciate the comments. Keep them coming. But speaking of so Shiv took the L there with Tom, then it got worse for her because the next step was her secret with her, you know, her working with Madsen was exposed. And it was exposed after she, you know, threatened Greg. And, you know, Greg, say what you want about the guy, he knows how to play the game. And he's playing the game. And she forgot about how the game was played. And it, I mean, really, this is like, and then like this mistake she made with Greg cost her, this, and then also maybe cost her the election with how the episode played out, or cost her side the election potentially. But her, she talks to Greg after she learned that, you know, the previous episode, the party at their house, well, the after party continued where Greg was hanging out all night with Madsen. Madsen apparently made Greg dance with an old man and had him drink things that aren't normally drinks, which, you know, I guess we can all speculate on what that might be. But in doing that, Greg got close to Madsen. And as we saw in previous episodes, Madsen is a very insecure character. He's this billionaire genius, whatever. We learned that that's kind of bullshit, but he's very insecure. You get a couple of drinks in him or some Coke or whatever, and he's happy to share his problems and what's going on in his life. So Greg kind of becomes like someone he sort of trusts for whatever reason. And Shiv learns about this new alliance with Madsen. And then she has this like, really weird, like, she asked Greg, she's like, do you find me attractive, Greg? Now, mind you, this is her cousin. She's like, you know, do you find me attractive? And Greg is like, what are you talking about? She's like, you know, just letting you know that, you know, because if you try to fuck me, I'm going to kill you. And then Greg, you know, after being threatened, Greg has a good response. Greg goes, he's like, well, you know, in a situation like this, silence is golden, but like, how golden? So like, basically, he's telling her, hey, I'll keep the mats and stuff quiet if you can pay me off. And Shiv's response was, oh, you'd like an offer. How about if I let you keep all your internal organs on your insides rather than pull them out of your asshole? Which I thought was a great line, but not a good move for Shiv because, you know, whenever it all starts falling apart and Kendall's trying to get Shiv to contact the Jimenez side and see if they can like, hey, will they work with us? Like Minkin will, she lies about calling, what's the guy's name?
Nate.
Oh, Nate. Yeah. She lies about calling Nate. Kendall calls Nate, finds out that she didn't call Nate. And then he runs into Greg and Greg spills the beans that yeah, Shiv's working with Madsen. And then, I mean, everything blows up in her face. Frank, go for
which,
it.
Which is, this is why I get so fucking annoyed with this show. Sometimes these motherfuckers have master degrees, law degrees. You don't
they've
think
got that, money. They've got money. That's what they've
you don't
got.
Think, you don't think that Kendall's not gonna call Nate? Like he hasn't been calling Nate all throughout this fucking election, all throughout the last couple of weeks. You don't think he's gonna call?
He didn't have sex with Nate like Shiv did. So like they have a Nate, special connection.
But Nate and Kendall have a relationship though. Like it would have been one thing if Shiv actually called Nate and told Nate, hey, I'm a bullshit Kendall. Just make sure what we say align. The fact that she didn't even call the dude. So Nate, of course, got blindsided when Kendall called him. And Nate said whatever he said to Kendall that it just wasn't smart. It was like bro, you don't think Nate's gonna get that call from Kendall eventually? Like, come on, man.
Hey, man, watch the news. look at all these people. Rudy Giuliani. He's in the news as we speak. Rudy Giuliani, former mayor. Mayor of the U.S.
He was America's mayor during 9/11.
Mayor.
20 years later, wow.
One of the dumbest on planet. Like these people are stupid. So one of the things that I hope this show exposes to a lot of people, especially people who come from, you know, more, you know, monolithic back, you know, environments, like all Black, all Hispanic, so on and so forth. And you get around spaces with a lot of white people. There's this natural inclination, and I'm not saying that's what we're doing here, but like to assume that these people are smart, right? Because they have like these resumes, these degrees, these titles, you know, the big hobble. These people are dumb as hell, man. And they make it through life a lot on privilege and access. And they're never really challenged on their intelligence. And the people who can challenge them are probably too intimidated to do that because of said privilege, said access, said, you know, power and all these things, resources. These people are stupid. Like Kendall, stupid, right? But like Donald Trump Jr. is stupid. Like they have the same, Donald Trump, they got Harvard degrees. Do you think Ted Cruz is smart? You think Marco Rubio, do you think these are like highly intelligent people?
I guess I was hoping for like a John F. Kennedy Jr. to pop up and like do something. Just like there's no John F. Kennedy Jr.'s in this motherfucker, like not one.
I mean,
he wasn't the greatest pilot. I guess I'll just put it that way.
JFK was also prone to some dumb shit. Like, like.
Well, I mean, he
Cuban Missile Crisis was not.
No. Not JFK. His son, the one that died in the airplane in the 90s, the pilot crash.
Yeah,
yeah. He had a lot of promise. He was, you know, very bright. Like, it's like, damn, there's no JFK Jr.'s in this motherfucking story. God damn, everybody's fucking Don Jr. and fucking Rudy Giuliani. Like, God, like, bruh.
Well, Frank, you start off talking about by like teams and sports and stuff. Think about like nepotism and teams. Like, an owner dies or whatever, passes on to his son. You know, we've got that going on here in Houston with a couple of our franchises. Maybe all three major franchises have that kind of thing set up. Tristan, your Warriors, I believe there's a lot of Lakers who are in line to inherit what Steph Curry built.
And unfortunately, the second,
Steph Curry won't live forever. Yeah.
The second Kirk Lacob takes over for Joe Lacob, I'm our,
that's you're a gone. Like,
we see this in every different industry. Like,
yeah,
so many people with power and resources, they're able to like elevate without really earning the thing that, you know, and we as people from, you know, from the peanut gallery, we just give them the credibility, right, without seeing like, is he, all these people actually smart? All these people actually qualified? Would they be able to make it in a, you know, a true meritocracy? And most of them wouldn't. They just wouldn't.
No. I mean, look at like someone like Elon Musk. He overpaid for Twitter by like $40 million basically on a dare. He got into a pissing contest and the people, they tricked him into overpaying for something. Like, and Twitter's kind of been a dumpster fire since. And, you know, now he's having somebody else run it because, you know, he doesn't know how to do a lot of things. So like,
and I just found out that he inherited Tesla. He didn't start that up out the blue. Like,
oh no, his dad, he's a nepto guy. His dad was like, you know, found all these like diamonds in a mine or so, you know, like that's how they got their wealth. Yeah. I mean, like it's
found.
Yeah, no, exactly. Right. Exactly.
Marcy, I mean, you are my spirit animal. God damn it.
Born on third base, man.
That's why I'm saying like this show is a very much a mirror reflection to real life. I mean, there are some like there are people, the thing is, those people with the money, they hire smart people. Like, I remember several years ago, keeping this on sports, Charles Barkley talked about how they asked him about his like how many degrees he had. He said, I don't really have any, but the people I hire do, they all have degrees, you know, because he can afford to pay these smart people to do the thinking for whatever, for businesses. So that's how this stuff works, honestly.
This is my friend's fault, because like it's hard for me to watch dumb people make decisions, because like my circle is very bright, like Tristan, Justin, Brittany, like all my friends are smart, educated, you know.
Fake it till you make it over here.
Like it's just very, I'm very gifted
on arrival.
Which is that?
And we have no problem calling you stupid when
no. And the great thing about my friend group is that we have no problem calling you an idiot and what are you doing and like and giving you back and putting you back on the right track. So when I watch shows like this and I watch these idiotic, are you smarter than the fourth grade ass decisions, it grinds my soul, because I don't understand how there's so many idiots on one cast making these very bad decisions. It's amazing to me. And Tristan, you're right. I mean, you see it every day in politics. You see it every day in these Fortune 500 companies of just dumb people inheriting things due to nepotism, or they married up, you know, saying like Willa. It's just all of it is just based on just space opportunity and being coming at the right womb. So yeah,
you're
right.
Just to put a bow on it, but like you mentioned your friend group being intelligent people who are not afraid to hold you accountable. Just imagine if it was a complete opposite, right? Where you had a bunch of idiots who are kind of all operating under the same cloud of stupidity, so they don't really understand how stupid they are and how pointless, you know, how unqualified they are for the things that they have.
And with money and power.
Exactly. Like, and they're afraid to hold each other accountable. Like, that's just not a part of their culture of saying, hey, you said something really racist. You shouldn't say that anymore. When Roman made the joke about blacks and Jews, you know.
Causing the fire, right.
Causing fires and stuff like that. People just looked at him. Nobody said, hey, Roman, that's not okay. You shouldn't say that, blah, blah, blah. It's just not a culture of accountability. So, that's me.
Yeah. So, we're talking a lot about bad people. Let's talk about a really good person who just joined us, Geeking Out with Melly Mel. Mel, happy to have you here. Thanks for joining us. We're talking about Succession, episode 8 of season 4. Let's continue talking about Shiv. And Marcy, I want to throw back to you. Let's talk about the scene that Shiv has with Kendall. And it's kind of a, you know, Kendall is kind of, okay, so in this episode, obviously his kid, in the previous episode, his daughter was kind of, I don't know if you want to say harassed, but she, you know, she had some run-ins with
microaggression.
Yeah. With Ravenhead, who's like one of the ATN anchor. It's like one of his fans or whatever, these fanatical people who are into politics that anyway, she had a bad experience with somebody and she's afraid for what's going to happen with the election. So in this episode, Kendall, instead of telling his wife, you know, that he's providing security for them, he has them followed by a car, which, I mean, crazy move by him. But also, you know, if you look at Kendall, like Roman appears to be, you know, if he has any kind of ideological side, it's probably right wing, whereas Kendall is kind of in the middle. Kendall probably is more liberal than he is conservative. And so you have him, you know, understanding that like Mencken, while he might be good for the company and that they could keep the company if Mencken becomes president, he's not good for, like, you know, his family. He's not good probably for the country. And so he has that kind of eating at him. And he goes to Shiv and he's trying to have this kind of heart-to-heart talk with her. And he admits and tells her, like, look, like, I've thought about this just being me. Just me and me taking over, not you and Roman. And, you know, then he's feeling bad for himself. And then she basically kind of says, you know, you're a good guy. And then she's like, essentially, you're a good guy. It's like, I'm not a good father. She said, no, you're good. You're okay. You tried. What did you think about these scenes with Kendall and Shiv?
These scenes are kind of why I want to root a little bit for Ken, because deep down, I don't think like Kendall is a bad person, like a bad man. Like you can see that he is at least trying to be a good dad, right? And he does care about what happened to his daughter, Sophie, and he cared enough to have them followed to be protected, but he should have, like, told his ex-wife that that's what's happening, because they then kind of freaked out that somebody was following him. So I think deep down, he cares about his family and his kids, and deep down, I think he wants to be a good dad, because that's not what he had, but I don't think he's good at executing it. When he executes it, he comes out being exactly like Logan, right? Like, working too much, not being with your kids, and then, like, having the gall to be like, well, I'm doing all of this for you. So I thought that that was very manipulative on Shiv's part to, again, just be like, oh, no, Ken, like, you're a good guy, because she knew that that's something that he's honestly grappling with. It wasn't, you know, like a facade. Like, he was, like, being vulnerable with her, just kind of telling her how he felt. So I didn't like that she manipulated him, but I don't know. This is why, like, I'm very torn between, like, laughing at Kendall when, like, all his plans turn to shit, like they always do, but then, like, feeling bad for him. So I think he recouped, though. I think he was able to then, like, come back and be like, bitch, I'll stab you in the back, too. Like, you thought you could get one up on me. So, yeah, not Kendall's best night. I think he's grappling with a lot. And even though he and Roman maybe have a win at the end, like getting Mencken, like, elected or whatever, on the ride home, like, you could tell that he's alone again, right? And then, you know, he's like, well, some people just don't know how to do deals, Vicarit. But yeah. I think, like, he doesn't understand that that also is referring to him.
See, I read that in kind of differently, because you're kind of, like you said, you kind of feel for him in this situation where, you know, he has his daughter who's being affected by the election. You can tell he's not a fan of this Mencken guy, also partially because his brother has a close relationship, and that'll kind of, you know, could maybe cause problems for him down the road as being, you know, the main guy in charge of Waystar Royco. But, you know, you kind of see that. Then he makes the decision, like, oh no, like, Shiv, you lied. Fuck it. We're going to go with Mencken. Like, he had to get back at her right away. But then at the end, you're right. He's sitting in the car, you know, his driver's driving him home. He calls his wife, says he wants to see his kids. Of course, it's too late to come see them. And you feel, you know, you kind of see, like, he's reflecting on everything, but then, you know, takes a pause, and he says, you know, some people just can't cut a deal. And ultimately, he's, like, becoming his dad. Like, it's just cold, hard business for him. And I don't know. It was a kind of a strange turn, I thought, for him to, for that to happen. Cause there's an emotional thing, but then at the end, it's all that matters is him being on top. But then that's the thing, is that with Mencken maybe being the president, he won't be on top because his brother will be the guy in charge. So it's such a crazy situation. Tristan, what was your read on that?
Kendall's a coward. That's really what it comes down to.
Nice way to just, like,
so much
of jab, yeah.
So much of this episode is like, how do people respond to cognitive dissonance, right? Like, cognitive dissonance should, you know, motivate you to, like, action. Like, so many people stood by, from Greg to, you know, to Jess to Shiv, you know, Kendall, like, all these people kind of stood by and watched as a thing that the damaging thing that they saw happening was happening. And they just kind of stood by. And Kendall's the worst one because he had the most power to actually stop it.
Yeah.
Right? Like you said, like, it's eating at him. This is what kind of ended any sympathy for Kendall at all for me going forward, just in general. Like, fuck Kendall. This goes back to last episode and, you know, Rava telling him about the microaggression that Sophie faced in the streets and how fearful she was. And that wasn't like an isolated thing. Like, Kendall knows, we all know that those type of microaggressions, you know, are happening all across the country, especially to children of color, right? Like, that's the important subtext of this, is that Kendall and Rava have a, you know, it's their adopted daughter, but a black child, you know what I'm saying? So she's going to feel the effects of Kendall allowing Minkin to be in power and all the things that are going to happen as a result. At the end, when he's talking to his driver, same driver he's had since the pilot, same guy, right? So this is somebody that he sees on a day-to-day basis. He has at least a working relationship with, maybe he's a little fond of. Like, this is also somebody who's going to be impacted by Minkin becoming president. And like I said, all the microaggressions and macroaggressions that come from there. But Kendall allows these things to happen because for him, the end justifies the means. Self-interest. What does he want overall? One. Yes, he wants ATN to be successful, blah, blah, blah. But he wants that company, not because it's in the best interest of the company, because it's in the best interest of him. And it's the thing that he's always wanted. And now he has a chance to get it. So he's willing to sacrifice his integrity, his daughter, yep, the respect of his ex-wife, the country. Like, all of these things are on the table for him to get the thing that he wants, which is just to be CEO. Like, that's it. Like, he doesn't really have this grand vision for ATN, for Waystar. He's just like, I just want to be CEO. I'm willing to even sacrifice my brother, my sister, all of these things. Like, everything is on the table for him. So it was the most cowardly act that Kendall's done. But again, for each one of these characters, everything that we've been saying about them since the pilot episode in season one has been kind of whitewashed within humor, through satire, through all these things. And what we saw in this episode was that Roman's, petulance, Shiv's arrogance, unearned arrogance, Kendall's cowardice, these things have real world consequences, right? So, like, now we can think about the people who put Trump in power, basically, because Trump did not get in power by himself. No. What were their self-interests? Like, what are the fatal flaws that they had that they allowed to just kind of shine in order to get this, this position, this ambassadorship, get this pardon, to get this, project, these funds for this project? Like, how many people put country, family, integrity, values on the line for self-interest? Like you said, Justin, this show is a reflection of society. And Kendall is just the CEO who's willing to trade in all these different values, which we see every day, for better profit, for business alliances, so on and so forth. So Kendall's a coward. I have no sympathy for him. He's a horrible father, horrible CEO, horrible brother, like horrible rapper. Like when he was, like everything he does, he's pretty bad.
You crossed the line with the rapper. I mean, come on.
I'm sorry, but we give him grace because Jeremy Strong's such an amazing thespian, and we see the stress, and we see the cognitive dissonance on his face. But like, if it doesn't lead to action, what's the point? Fuck him. You know what I'm saying? Like, it has to lead to some type of action. Although I'm past the point of like giving people credit for what they feel. Like, I'm sorry, you feel bad for the things that's happening. What are you willing to do to stop the bad things from happening?
I think to add to that, I couldn't say any better myself, Tristan. I think to add to that, narcissistically, I think Kendall believes he's on a winning streak right now. Personally, I think in his mind, the Life Plus shit with some Apple meets fucking Tesla type shit, I feel like he thought it was innovative as fuck. I feel like he thinks that that's gonna give him cachet going to election night. I think that he thinks that, fucking over Shiv, whether it's, it was a single solitary move because of what he found out, or just another chess moving piece to be like, this is what my dad would have done. He wouldn't let anything get in the way, trying to think about his daughter and like hiring, servicemen and bodyguards to follow his family to like now, like, trying to, there's a scene where he's trying to talk to Frank. And like getting Frank on his side to like, hey, let's keep this shit. To like, finding out about Mattson and like the inflation numbers there. And what's so funny about that, and this goes back to the narcissism I'm talking about. He's talking about, potentially blowing Mattson's cover about the inflated numbers. Well, motherfucker, just two episodes before, you inflated numbers by Life Plus. And like they're having this dick measurement contest about exposing each other. So like in this disillusioned mind of his, he feels like he's winning and he's gaining all this cachet to be Logan 2.0.
But see, that's the thing in this episode with Kendall. He makes the decision because he can't decide on the Mankin thing, right? He's going back and forth. Once he finds out that Shiv has betrayed him and Roman, he's like, oh, fuck it. We're going to go Mankin, right? But it's not a good strategic move. To me, what he discovered in the last episode, the fact that Madsen has inflated his numbers, but like in India by two Indias, right? That's huge. To me, wouldn't that be enough information to float out there that would keep that sale from happening? Like, to me, he should have let the election play out. If Mankin wins the election fair and square, whatever, fine. But to call it for Mankin in that moment wasn't a good move for him, because you know you're basically handing the keys to being the CEO to your brother if this actually goes through. If Mankin does what y'all think he's gonna do and he blocks it, well, guess who he's gonna put in charge? He's gonna have the influence, or Roman's gonna have the juice to take over, right?
What did Tom say about information?
Yep, exactly.
Like red wine. You store it, you hoard it, and when it's time, you bring it out and you bust somebody's face with it. Like he doesn't have the patience to let that information sit and fester and like build and turn into something else. He had to get back at his sister just like that. All of them,
right?
The entirety of democracy was built on these childhood like microaggressions, these childhood memories and experiences, and you know, conflicts and things that they just can't let go.
You referenced the chicken and steak thing, which I thought was a really funny part of the episode, where you know they talk about when they were, it's Kendall and Roman talking about they were kids, how you know Roman always wanted to have steak, and Kendall preferred roasted chicken. They would usually have chicken because Roman would throw a tantrum, and Kendall said, well, you know, we couldn't give in to you throwing a tantrum, so that's why we always had chicken. And then basically now Roman's like, well, now I'm gonna get my steak. Like, you're gonna side with Mankin. And Kendall's line was, so because we had so much chicken when we were kids, I have to like the fascists now. I thought that was a great line.
Aren't they rich enough that they could have just, like, they have chefs, like they could have just made you a fucking steak, like you're rich enough. But yeah, I totally got that. Yes, like totally what you guys have been saying. They're just stupid. They just want to one up each other. Like, that's stupid. That's shit I would do with my sister when we were like 8, not when we are like 38.
And that, it just hit me, you saying that, Marcy. The fact that I'm going to assume this was a Logan decision to only give him one. Like, they've been pitted against each other since they were kids.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, he wants steak. He wants chicken. Like, who's going to win? Right. And like, they've been holding that in. All of them have been holding that in. Shiv last episode, like, hey, remember, you know, you said Shiv spilled this in the back seat. Like, these are grown. These are 40. All of them are 30 plus.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they can't let these things go. And again, the larger point of this is who suffers, right? Kendall, Shiv, and Roman are not suffering in any type of way, right? It's the
people. No matter what.
Yeah. No matter what, like through all these childhood squabbles, you know, these all these things that they just simply can't get over, and it is fester and they come out in the wrong time. We as a people, you know, like the elitists in our country, like when they have squabbles and they have, you know, family squabbles, people have divorces. How many sports teams or sports franchises have been affected by divorces?
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? Like Washington.
The Saints.
You know, Washington.
Dodgers.
Commanders, the Dodgers. Yep. Like one little divorce or this thing happened and now you lost a team, or now you're stuck with this owner who, you know, can't make good decisions, hires the wrong people, no winners. Like, people suffer when the people at top have these different conflicts, and that's one of the biggest themes of this episode and the show as a whole.
Yeah, no, you nailed it with that. So we've talked a little bit about, we talked a lot about Mankin. We haven't mentioned the Democratic candidate much, Daniel Jimenez. He's not prominently featured, but you know, there's another candidate who threw his hat in the ring in this race, and that's Mr. Connor Roy. So let's talk about Connor's adventure in this episode. Connor starts off by talking about how he said, I'm so glad I didn't drop out. And, you know, this is very relatable to all of us. He said, you know, it just makes it makes an election more interesting when you're in it, which we can all relate being in presidential elections ourselves. Like it's better when you're involved. It's more fun when you've dropped $100 million to gain 1% of the vote. But I do like how like Connor is hanging his hopes on Kentucky. You know, Kentucky's going to be his state. Then they find out that he doesn't win Kentucky. So Will is like, fuck Kentucky. And then Connor's like, he tries to take the high road. He's like, no, we shan't be that. I like how he said, shan't be that. Like, who talks like that? Then we get, you know, Connor finally sees the writing on the wall that he has no chance in hell to win. So he calls Roman about last week's deal about trying to be an ambassador. You know, maybe Minkin can find an ambassador spot for him in some country. And I love this exchange where he's pitching Roman on the phone. He's like, maybe I could organize a little coup down in old Peru, or put me in a van in Tistakistan or Tataki. I don't know how to say this. Something about there's a stand in it. And he said, or maybe couldn't I just be our fun guy in Uruguay? And Roman's like, your rhymes are compelling. Let me see what Minkin says. And in the end, he decides that Connor will concede, but concede in Minkin's direction. So, you know, trying to convince the con heads that, you know, Minkin is the guy. But then he gives a concession speech, an all-timer, where he calls out both of his running mates, former running mates. I guess they bailed on him before this got too far down the road because they realized he had no chance. Then he talks to the American people. He says, hey, I happen to be a billionaire. Sorry. But honestly, America, you flunked it. And then he says to the con heads, I salute you. And America, be afraid. Be warned. For the con heads are coming. Marcy, are you a con head, first off? No. Okay. What are your thoughts on Connor Roy in this episode?
He was also part of just like really great comedic just infusion into the episode. You gotta feel bad for Connor, but it's hilarious how pathetic he is. And while Kendall and Roman are having all these, you know, discussions about who got steak and who got chicken, like, what is Connor getting? He wasn't getting anything. He's like the forgotten child, like the firstborn son who was the forgotten child. So I think there's also a lot there, but no, it was hilarious. Again, when Will is like, fuck Kentucky. He's like, no, like, alas, Kentucky, right? Like, he tried to be like very gracious about it. But then when we see him on TV, he's not gracious. He's made a complete 180, and he's like calling out his running mates and people who opposed him and be afraid, like, con heads are coming. That's very like what stand back and stand down or whatever, like that kind of rhetoric was. So I think it's indicative of what happens in real life, right? Like, somebody can be somebody that you tolerate as a politician behind the scenes, but then they have to go on TV and like play up this persona that's a little bit different than what they might be. And, you know, the persona is typically more belligerent or just annoying. So I think he did that very well. But no, I just, fought Kentucky for you, Connor. Like, they could have at least voted for you.
But if you're in Kentucky now and you're watching this, we don't endorse what Connor Roy said. So please like and subscribe. We appreciate that.
We love you, Kentucky.
We love Kentuckians, even though we're in Texas. Tristan, thoughts on Connor's performance?
I mean, what do we say about, you know, meritocracies and stupid people? Connor, I'm glad that the Connor president thing is, I mean, obviously the whole show is wrapping up, but I'm glad like that we're putting a bow on the Connor thing, because it's the one part of the show I think wasn't super fully developed. Like, we didn't see Connor, like, you know, with a team and like actually putting a team together or doing any strategic things. Like, he's just, everything that he does is off camera, which adds to like the humor of the show, the comedic elements of the show, but it wasn't something that we were ever supposed to take seriously. Like, it's the most caricature part of the show. Like, it's obvious that this is satire, like completely obvious. Whereas everything else is more subtly satirical. But I always love Connor. I think is one of the best parts of the show. I wish he was used a little bit better, but just on a comedic side, like he always brings a certain amount of like levity to like these situations, especially in an episode like this, which is pretty dark. And Connor just kind of comes through with the necessary comedic style points, whatever. But love Connor. Like that concession speech was something. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was absolutely something. On a second watch, you realize how much is geared towards Minkin, like kind of shamelessly geared towards Minkin. There are some kind of sadistic elements of his speech too. But love Connor, love the comedic elements. Wish that presidential thing was either wrapped up earlier in the show, or just kind of given a little bit more weight than it was.
Maybe more fleshed out. Yeah. Frank, what do you think about Connor?
You know what? So Marcy made this point about Kendall about whether or not to laugh at him or feel bad for him. I 90% feel bad for Connor. Like, no shit. Like, no joke. I really do, because I feel like this whole presidential attempt was more so like just wanting to be heard by people that never really heard him. Whether it's
he's a billionaire, though. Let's just don't forget that.
Yeah,
he's doing okay.
But he is the walking symbolism of like overcompensation. He has all the money. He has the all the financial influence and power. But again, like, nobody respects him. You know, and it's very rare that you see the older sibling not be respected by the younger siblings. But when you look when you look deeper into it, he's the half sibling. His mother was sent to a crazy house by his father. So, like, you know, coming up, he didn't have a chance socially. You know, like again, one of the saddest bits of TV the last 10 years was, you know, when Willow walked out on him and he wasn't sure that he was going to get married. And he went through this whole like haiku about love. Like, you know, like, I don't deserve love. I don't know what love is. You know, I never had love before, so it doesn't hurt me to not have it now. Like, that's heartbreaking. That's for a 50 plus year old man to say that. Like, past all the jokes, past all the, you know, one-liners from his siblings, that's so sad. And like, I feel like this sad attempt to presidency wasn't even about winning. It was just about being respected and being loved by the people that he loves. And it's just, it's really sad. It really, every time he's on camera, I get sad. It's not even, it was funny at first, but like when you dive more into his character and dive more into his origin, and like his origin story is almost in passing. I will say this from this standpoint, the show was great. From like when they give out origin stories, they do it in a way that's synonymous with the character. And because Connor is such a forgotten person, he's such a sidestep character, they sidestep his story a lot. And like, oh, by the way, his mom was in the crazy house. Oh, you know, by the way, you know, he's the half sibling. Oh, by the way, he's never felt love before. It's all like almost, it's giving an offhanded sidestep way for the most part. And it's just a walking reminder that, you know, just because you have all this money and influence and power, that people respect you.
Well, I think he even mentioned that in the episode where Logan dies, when they told him, he's like, oh, he was never proud of me. And they're kind of taken aback. And he's like, no, what I meant is like, I never got a chance to like make him proud, because he didn't like live long enough to, I guess, see the outcome of the election, even though he wasn't going to win. But like you said, Frank, like, we don't get a lot of really good glimpses into his backstory. It's all just kind of like, again, like sprinkled throughout. Again, in like this season, we learned why he doesn't like cake, right? Because he's like, no, that's kind of like the cake you get when you're told your mom is going to be sent to the loony bin, right? So there's a lot of sadness to Connor. And I think Connor could have been like a much more interesting character than they made him out to be. And I think like that would have been worth exploring just more to Connor. And they could have even shown that even though he didn't grow up as close to his dad as siblings did, like maybe he was the more competent one to take over the companies, but they didn't go that way. They just kind of made him into a little bit of a joke, a little bit of a punching bag. But I think Alan Ruck does like a really great job of portraying him so that while we can also like laugh at him and like say, you know, Connor's so pathetic, we can also feel bad for him at the same time and be like, wow, like Connor's really pathetic.
That's a good point, Marcy. That's one thing I do agree with. They really missed the mark on what he could have been as far as like, you know, diving more into him, into his character and diving more into what he's been through to give us a better idea of the man of who the man is today. Yeah, man, it's just, I don't know. I don't laugh at him anymore. I just feel sad when he's on screen.
All right. I definitely laugh at him. And I, you know, he'd be a good candidate to be a spinoff. I could see like, you know, because his political career is not over. There's another election coming 4 years. So we could have Connor Roy : Rise of the Coneheads. That could be the show. I would maybe watch that. I think we all would watch that. But getting into the more comedic moments. So there was a touchscreen on the ATN news desk floor that malfunctioned and everyone was like freaking out. Tom was freaking out. Kendall's calling him freaking out about it. I have been in a scenario similar to this and it's not fun when something's going wrong and everyone is blaming you or asking questions and you're trying to fix it. That one was funny, but it wasn't as funny as the wasabi in the eyes that are that Darwin, the decision desk guy, takes. He's next to Greg. Greg is having his bodega sushi, you know, in the break room, and he's got some wasabi sauce, and apparently the guy gets it on his hands, gets it in his eyes. They're trying to help him out. So Tom's like, oh, you know, get some water, pour some water. So Greg grabs a canned drink, opens it, pours it on the guy. It turns out it's LaCroix. So we learned that one of the Disgusting Brothers is LaCroix boy, which I didn't know that was going to happen, but you know, I'm a LaCroix boy also. I like LaCroix too. But he pours LaCroix in the guy's face. Of course, that makes it worse. It's burning his eyes. I like how Greg said it's natural. He's like, it's like medical. He's like, takes a drink of it. He's like, it's not even that lemony. Like, I don't know. I thought that was a funny scene. One of like the more like slapsticky kind of comedy, which you don't get with this show, but I enjoyed that.
First, I thought maybe he was having like some kind of medical emergency because he ate the bodega sushi. I didn't know what was happening until he said, oh, I got the wasabi in my eye. But I was like, are they going to have this guy have like some kind of bad reaction to the bodega sushi? Because I don't think I want to see all that. But no, I think that was a fun little moment. That and just kind of like the whole like doing the Coke behind the whiteboard thing was just, you know, more fun to add to this otherwise very dark episode.
I would have thought that scene was way funnier if I wasn't like already tense, because when that happened, like they're trying to decide whether to call Wisconsin and I'm on edge. It's like, I don't have time to fucking laugh at it. Like on the second watch, it's funnier because first of all, I was confused on like how he got the wasabi in his eye, but.
Me too. Like, it's like, his computer's next to Greg's food, but like it's not like it's like right up against it. Yeah. I watched on the second watch, I still didn't really see it. It's almost like the guy would have had to go out of his way to like dip his fingers into the wasabi sauce and then get it in his eye. Very strange.
Funny. Well, we know why. It's like Tristan said, it's full of stupid people. They just find ways to get shit into their eyes. Like I didn't know how. I'm like, how did you look away and just dip your hand in this man's food? Like, I don't understand how did this happen? Like, I don't understand, because watching it live the first time, I rewound it three times. I was like, how did he get his hands full of wasabi? I don't understand.
The only thing I thought of like when I first watched it, I thought maybe like Greg had spilled it all over the table or something, and it like the guy when he grabbed his laptop, maybe he got it on his hands because his laptop was closed. I don't know, but I mean they show the wasabi and it's like in the container, you know, in the food plastic food container. So I'm not sure what. how that happened, but I thought it was funny nonetheless. So the final thing I want to talk about is it's not a funny thing. It's actually how we've kind of talked about this a little bit, but I just wonder, like, what are y'all's thoughts on the voting center in the storyline? The voting center in Milwaukee is firebombed, which destroys, you know, 100,000 ballots that seemingly would likely have gone to this Democratic candidate. And I just want y'all's thoughts on, I'll start with Marcy here. Like this, I mean, stuff like this kind of has happened, but like this could definitely happen. And it seems like if it did happen, I don't know that it would have played out much different in the real world than it did in the show. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, that is scary. Regardless of which way you want an election to go, you want it to be done fairly, right? Like, I wouldn't want something like that to happen, even if it meant that the candidate I was supporting would be winning, because that's just kind of undermining what the process is. Even though, like, there's already a lot of things that happen legally that already undermine the process or democracy or fairness as it is, right? We have all of these voting laws that have been passed in the last year since the midterms that are aimed to, like, disenfranchise more people legally. So, yeah, you're right. That was just kind of like a very serious thing that they continue to want to, like, poke fun at, right? Like, you know, Roman kept on, like, calling it, like, the lefty fire or whatever. But these are scary things that happen in the real world, and I would hate to see how we would handle that here, like, in, like, our world, because after 2000, right, like, how long did we have to wait? The stupid hanging Chad situation with, like, Bush and Gore, and, you know, even after this election, we still had to wait several days. I think, what was it? We didn't know who won it until Saturday, until they finished counting all of the absentee ballots and things like that. So that's what I didn't like about this episode. That's what gave me a lot of anxiety about this episode was, like, first, it just kind of showed how people can make all of these decisions that really impact a whole country. And also how, like, fragile democracy can be when we have these types of people in positions of power. And that's just kind of really scary to me, at least.
Tristan, what do you think about the possibility of that happening in the real world? What happened with the Milwaukee fire in succession?
I was watching it, like, hoping somebody did not watch this and get ideas, because we've already seen that, yeah. Marcia, we've seen things similar. And I don't think we've seen somebody, like, firebomb a voting center, but we see people firebomb Planned Parenthoods and, you know, abortion clinics and stuff like that. So, like, it doesn't really have to be specific to voting, right? Just any Democratic or anything that we hold dear and sacred that can help people, that we can use to, like, you know, make the country a better place. There is a certain segment of opposition, white supremacists, who are willing to take those measures in order to, you know, win whatever, you know, whatever winning looks like for their particular side. So everything about this episode was meant to be forewarning. It was also meant for us to, like, call back to a certain time, you know, specifically 2016, and see just how, like, the levers of democracy are so fragile. You know, all it takes is one fire, you know, or one bad decision, one squabble between siblings, so on and so forth, that anything like that could happen. So I give the show props for, like, coming up with a very creative way to, like, show that message. That anything can happen. And then once that happens, once the fire breaks and, you know, these absentee ballots are lost, then what? Like, what do we do? What's our mechanism to getting that solved? And, you know, the show, like, there really is none. Like, you just kind of have to kind of take those lumps. Because on one issue, I was like, yeah, they're right. if we're talking about Milwaukee, there's no fucking way on planet Earth that the majority of people in the greater Milwaukee area are voting Republican. That just goes against decades and decades and decades of data, right? But if you're trying to make the argument that we should call it, there's not really a great counter other than, hey, we can just count the votes that we have. So that, to me, showed just how fragile the entire democratic process is, that one little thing like that could really affect, you know, one of the biggest elections in our lifetime, as they kept saying. So
yeah,
it was all fear for me. Like, it just made me more scared.
Frank, what do you think about that?
I couldn't really say it any better myself. What Marcy and Tristan mentioned, I can make the argument that we've already seen it, and it's just in different diplomatic formats. Like, when Biden won, Ms. Abrams played such a major part in, in Georgia and Fulton County. What did you see right after that? They started redistricting. They started changing counties around and like trying to manipulate votes for the next election and the next election, and outsourcing jobs and things of that nature. So in a way, we see it. But Tristan said, it's just another dangerously creative idea that people might try to attempt. So I mean, when it comes to curtailing votes or trying to manipulate the system, it's been going on since the dawn of time. I mean, during Reconstruction, when slaves were free, given the 40 acres and the mule, when they went to go vote, that Ku Klux Klan members were outside getting ready to hang them, So this has been something that's been going on just in different forms of manipulation. So, it's just another new idea.
Yeah. It was obviously very scary. I think it was really impressive what the show did, creating a scenario that is very, could definitely happen. One thing, when we watch these shows, one of the criticisms for everything is like, oh, that's not real, that couldn't happen. But like with this thing, like they talked to, political, analysts on both sides, and they kind of came up with this scenario, which, pretty scary stuff. And I mean, we've had stuff like this happen similar in the past, but I thought it was pretty masterful the way they did that. Cause like I said, this whole show has been a mess. I mean, the election had to be a mess. There's no way it was going to be a clean, smooth thing. Unlike what Mencken says in his speech, Tristan, you kind of referenced it a little bit ago. Mencken talks about how him being elected is like this like clean alternative. And I mean, it's just kind of a weird, he's saying stuff that like obviously is not true. He's saying stuff like, this isn't, our society is not going to be transactional. It's not going to be, you do something for me, I do something for you. But that's exactly what got him, ATN to call the election in his favor. And I also liked how they showed how important TV networks play in elections, where they don't have the power to decide an election. However, they can call it for, and they can influence their viewers to make people think that, oh, this guy won or that guy lost for sure. They have influence. And so they do play a really important role. And the fact that these siblings own this, this Fox News like channel, part of the story is, it's really impressive what the writers and the showrunner and the creator have done with this season, with the whole series. It's really good. There's only two episodes left, and I can't believe there's only two episodes left. And we know next week is the funeral episode, the long awaited funeral of Logan Roy. So can't wait for that. But as we get out of here, do y'all have any final thoughts, Marcy?
I'm just very ready to see this funeral. The previews kind of made it seem like Roman is practicing for, I guess, this eulogy that he has to give, but yeah, it also kind of made it look like there's a breakdown coming or a meltdown coming. So I'm definitely like looking forward to that. Also looking forward to like Shiv's revenge, like woman scorned will kind of torch anything. So I think that'll be fun to watch. So that's just kind of what I'm waiting for.
Tristan, what are your final thoughts? And maybe what are your thoughts looking ahead?
Final thoughts on this episode. Like I said, it's for me one of the the most impactful episodes of television that I've seen in a long time. And definitely, I think one of the best Succession episodes, just from start to finish. I knew it was gonna be that shit when the cold open was like 30 seconds. Like they got to it real quick. And I remember thinking like, damn, this is quick. Like normally we get like a longer scene and then credits and then we get into it. But like they got to that shit quickly. So that let me know that it was gonna be a pretty tense episode, you know, tense hour. Next week, I cannot wait to see how Roman screws his funeral speech up, because that's going to happen. Again, every time Roman thinks he's up here, he always gets knocked down like a few pegs. So I'm interested in seeing how that happens. Just the emotional roller coaster that all the siblings are going to go through. I can't wait.
Yeah, given the eulogy, doesn't seem like a Roman spot. That's more of a Kendall kind of gig. That's in front of an audience, you know, a public speaking kind of deal that Kendall thrives on. I don't see Roman doing too well with that. Frank, final thoughts, and what are your thoughts looking ahead?
I'm just waiting to see what is the key stupid decision that makes this kingdom fall. That's kind of where I'm at now with this show. And then I'm ready to see the mom next week. I know she's going to be there. That's going to highlight my Sunday next Sunday evening. So, I don't know. I'm at the point now. I'm just kind of like, is this Enron or nah? That's my position now.
Yeah, you brought up the mom. The mom's going to be back. We're going to see Marcia. She's at the funeral. We're going to see somebody else. Logan's brother. We haven't seen him in a long time. Ewan's back. So, yeah, it should. I think it's going to be a great one, much like this one. So now you know what we think about this episode. We want to know what you think about this episode. And one way you can tell us is like several people have done today in our live stream with our chat. We've had we had Roxby, we had Texas Potterhead, geeking out with Melly Mel stop by. We appreciate that. Yeah, so if you're watching this on YouTube now or later, we really appreciate it. Do us a big favor. Like this video, subscribe to the channel. That really helps us out. We have a lot of stuff coming up later this week. We're talking Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire. Next week, we're continuing Succession. We're also going to have the Fast X review, Fast 10. Yes, my franchise. Is it my favorite franchise? No, but I call it my franchise. Anyway, we're talking about that next week. Can't wait for that. Got so much more coming up this summer. So subscribe, check that out. And hey, if audio or video is not your thing, we're on audio platforms also. Check us out on Spotify. We're on Apple Podcasts. We're on Google Podcasts. And hey, if you're on there, give us a 5-star rating. We appreciate that. And you know, we're also on social media. So check us out there. We're on Facebook. We're on Twitter. We're on Instagram. We're at Watchers Basement. So go there, have fun with that. Tag us in posts. Use the hashtag hashtag Watchers Basement. We appreciate that too. So yeah, like I said, we have a lot coming up. We appreciate everybody who's joined us today. So as we get out of here, I want to say thanks again to Marcy, to Frank, and to Tristan for joining me. And we will see you next week. So thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. And have a good night. Bye-bye.